You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 6 of Atheistically Speaking. How you doing, David?
Doing well.
Good, me too. Okay, so we have some interesting stuff to talk about today. Do you want to introduce it?
Sure. So for today's episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about spirituality, the use of the word, what it means, what people mean by it, how people understand it, and specifically its role in the discourse about atheism and how atheists sort of approach this term. And I think we have a fantastic video that really will kind of get us started here. So I will be able to play that for you guys. It'll be an interview, part of an interview with Diana Nyad on Oprah.
Yeah.
So we can cue that up for you.
Yes. And it's likely you guys have heard this before because it was rather a big story at the time. But we're going to go back to it because it is very... As David said, it's a very good example of what we want to talk about. So I'll go ahead and start it now. It's just this music. That's what we wanted you to hear.
You told our producers that you're not a God person, that you're a person who's deeply in awe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not a God person. And do I argue against my friends who are, you know, religious, Buddhist, Jews, Christians?
Do you consider yourself atheist?
I'm an atheist. And
but you're in the awe.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't understand why anybody would find, you know, a contradiction in that. I can stand at the beach's edge with the most devout Christian, Jew, Buddhist, go on down the line, and weep with the beauty of this universe and be moved by all of humanity. All the billions of people who have lived before us, who have loved and hurt and suffered. So to me, my definition of God is humanity and is the love of humanity. And as we return to, you know...
Well, I don't call you an atheist then. I think if you believe in the awe and the wonder and in the mystery...
Okay.
That is what God is.
Okay.
That is what God is.
Well,
God,
I guess,
is not,
you know,
the bearded guy in the sky.
It's not bearded, but I guess there is an inference with God that there is a presence. There is either a creator or an overseer. I don't criticize anybody because, you know what? The definition of life is we will never know. Mm-hmm. We will never know. You know, what
until that last breath.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And maybe it's an oh wow one for you,
you know,
as it
I
was
could
for
be
Steve
like,
Jobs.
Whoa, I should have been praying all these years. I'm going the wrong way. But for now, I don't criticize anybody. People tell me they see ghosts. They see ghosts. People tell me that they remember past lives back to the Middle Ages. They remember them. People see God and feel God, and that's their faith. And I have nothing to say about it. Just for me, I'm an atheist who's in awe.
An atheist in awe. So do you consider yourself a spiritual person, even as an atheist?
I do. I don't think there's any contradiction in those terms. I think you can be an atheist who doesn't believe in an overarching being who created all of this and sees over it. But there's spirituality because we human beings and we animals and maybe even we plants, but certainly the ocean and the moon and the stars, we all live with something that is cherished and we feel the treasure of it. And
I believe that and feel that so deeply. It's why every time I enter my yard or leave, I say, hello, trees.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, the older I am, I walk around every day with, you know, flowers and buildings that people created. And but certainly beings, you know, just every pair of eyes I look into, I see the souls.
Okay, and how do you define that, the soul?
A soul is your spirit. It's your love of humanity. It's your belief that there are, you know, there's more than you. There are people before us that you could weep to look at the discovery of an ancient city and realize that those people lived and they loved and they danced and they ate and they suffered and they, you know, they lived just as we are. So there have been so many 40 and 60 and 80 year lives, billions of them. And we all have souls. And I feel their collective souls.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think happens when we die?
I think that the soul lives on because we have created so much energy. And when we display courage and hope, it lives on. But I do believe the body goes back to ash, and it is never more.
I think that there's a lot here in this bit. Some of what I really want to talk about, which we'll get to later, I think, is the euphemisms that she uses and the awe and what spirituality is in the souls. But I think a great thing to talk about right off the bat is just this idea. She says that Diana, rather, says she lives in awe and she really appreciates, she can stand on the edge of the ocean and weep just the same as, you know, and she kind of gives a list of various religions. And not long after that, Oprah challenges her atheism. Well, I wouldn't call you an atheist then, I think is what she says. And that's kind of insane, I think.
I found that incredibly insulting, especially at the time. It's really frustrating.
There's a bit of the metaphor, I think, is really what it gets into. And I think that's what the awe is and what the spirituality is. Oprah says that God is the awe, not the bearded man. And I think Diana's right when she responds saying that, well, there is this kind of implication that God is more than just that. There's a creator, there's a being, or there's an essence or something like that. And that's really what she's denying. It's sort of, I guess, maybe initially I kind of take the stance that I don't like the use of the word spirituality or awe in these kinds of metaphors, because I think they lend themselves so easily to people like Oprah saying, oh, well, because you're an awe, because you're spiritual, you're not an atheist. And she can make it mean whatever she wants it to mean, even though that's clearly not what Diana was trying to talk about. In some ways derailed their conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I find this video, as I said, I find it really frustrating. I find it pretty insulting. I sort of don't know, as you said, it did derail their conversation to the point where I don't really know where Diana stands, because she started off pretty well, pretty strongly. She's not wanting to offend anyone, but she asserts that she's an atheist. And I can't help but wonder if she was maybe intimidated by Oprah and almost bullied a little bit. But, you know, when someone just comes out and says, well, you say, I'm an atheist, and then, you know, I experience that, and then they say, well, I don't consider you an atheist then. But in pretty forceful tone of voice, I can't help but wonder if she was maybe a little intimidated into saying some of these things that she said toward the end that were a little ridiculous, in my opinion. I'm not sure what you think about that. It sounds like she could have easily been trying to relate with Oprah and trying to sort of give in to, because she felt that pressure.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, I agree. I don't know exactly what Diana's stance is either because of that. When she starts out, part of the difficulty I have with words like awe and spirituality is they don't really say a whole lot. Towards the end of the conversation, Diana says that she believes in souls, that people have souls. She says, when I look into a pair of eyes, I see a soul. And Oprah asks her, what's a soul? And she says that a soul is a spirit, your love of humanity, belief that there is more than you. But when she first describes it as just a spirit, well, that's, you know, what's a soul? So there's some word that we don't really know what it is. And then defining it as some other word that we don't really know what it is. And that's kind of the danger of these kinds of metaphors. I'm not sure exactly what she's talking about. If your response to a question like that is, when you look into a pair of eyes, what do you see? You know, and if I were to say, oh, I feel a connection with this person, what is that connection? Well, I feel like this person has a shared love of humanity, that they appreciate that there are people who've lived before us, people that lived after us, that the decisions that I make and the positivity or negativity that I bring into the world affects people around me. And I think that's a very important part of our lives. If you really talk about those kinds of things, those are very meaningful things. That's something you can find common cause with. And it's very, I think, much more clear than saying that you're in awe, or you have, you know, you're spiritual or that sort of thing. Maybe there's less temptation to kind of creep more towards, like she did at the end with the souls, you know, possibly plants having this collective sense or that sort of thing.
Yeah. Things get so watered down. And so, you know, certainly Christians wouldn't define the soul as that, I don't think, in based on any scripture or dogma that I know of. The soul is a soul. It's something in your body that goes to heaven, blah, blah, blah. So a problem with that definition that she gave is, okay, what if there's a person who doesn't have that awe of people? Or do they not have a soul? They're soulless. Kill them. It's just, you can't just define things however you want and completely rewrite the definition that is carried in the dogma and everything of Christianity. I think that's cheating a little bit. I think this entire conversation was cheating. It was, I'm an atheist. Oprah saying, no, you're not. You're not an atheist. And then it was like, okay, I'm going to kind of try my hardest to bend over backwards to change my terms so that they mean something that Oprah can then say like, oh, okay, I accept that. And it's very unfair. I dislike it greatly.
Yeah, I think it's unfair that Oprah kind of forces her to do that. But I don't think there's anything wrong with Diana trying to find a common cause or a common ground. I don't know if you've had this experience. I have this experience quite often. When I'm talking about atheism, especially as I'm talking to my friends about the show or my family, and the topic of a soul comes up, you know, it's very popular. People like to ask me, you know, what do you think about, do people have souls? Are people going to heaven or hell, or that sort of thing? And if it's someone who's not super religious, maybe not, you know, they wouldn't call themselves religious. They wouldn't call themselves atheist or agnostic or a non-believer either. They're, you know, maybe it's not something they think about on a daily basis. I find that you're usually comfortable with the word spiritual. And when we talk about what that means, it comes to this idea of, I guess what Diana was talking about, your love of humanity, belief that there is more than you. And I share that same belief. And so I'm able to find common cause with these people in that. But because they associate it with this word spirit or soul, they think that that is somehow not compatible with atheism. And then they're often surprised to find that me, an atheist, you know, we very much are on the same page about many of those things. But we have to remove these layers of metaphor and ambiguity and, as you said, watering things down just to get to that commonality.
Yeah, but I don't know. Okay, first off, I think it depends on the situation. I think that if you're on national television or whatever her network is, and you're trying to have a conversation with somebody who seems to be bullying you, that could be one thing, I guess. But why couldn't she have just answered, I think the soul is a product of it's our mind. It's a product of evolution. It's individual to each of us, but it's not supernatural at all. And I think that would have been honest to her. It would have been attempting to bridge the gap a bit, try to concede that yes, it is individual to us. It's, you know, it's something special. It's something we have that I don't think other animals have. The amount of identity we have. It's arguable, but that would be something she could say to try to branch out a bit, but to stick to her guns and say, it's not supernatural. And I don't know that Oprah would have necessarily agreed with that, but I think that's more honest, don't you? I think that I'm not trying to assume too much about your conversations, or I'll try not to assume too much about your conversations. But in my experience, what's happening is that the religious people are trying to get you to be believing what they're believing in their minds.
No, yeah, I see what you mean, and I don't mean to sound like I would have responded in the same way that Diana did, or that I think that her response was all that clear, because I don't think it was very clear. She describes her definition of a soul as a spirit. Well, that didn't help at all. She had to go much further into it, yeah, to really even... I didn't know what she meant by that. And I'm actually advocating for those of us who are non-believers not using words like soul, spirit. And I'm kind of iffy on spiritual, because I think they do carry what you were suggesting, this kind of background, metaphysical baggage from where the terms came from. But the conversations that I've had that I was referring to aren't with religious people, because I think you're absolutely right. When you're having this conversation with most people who are, you know, very devoutly religious, when you find that commonality, they're trying to find where maybe you as an atheist actually believe in a soul, but maybe you don't know that you actually do.
No kidding. And sorry, just to step in real quick, like in the case of like a mom or something, it's like their way of trying to find like, okay, he's not going to go to hell because he kind of, you know.
Yeah, no, yeah.
And that I find frustrating. I mean, it's, you know, I understand, I'm sympathetic, but okay. So sorry, just to jump in with that. That was, so you took my meaning well. That was what I meant. And so, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's I agree with you in that. I guess I'm talking about the conversations with someone who is not that that into the religious topics. Maybe they didn't grow up religious, or
so kind of like a liberal Christian, maybe, or not even Christian, just like a liberal kind of spiritual person.
Yeah, someone that if you gave them a census document, they wouldn't list themselves as a non-believer. Okay. They might list themselves as an other, you know, that kind of person. If you ask them, do you believe in God? They'd say, oh, yeah, I guess so. But what do you mean by that? And then they don't really know necessarily because maybe they, you know, they don't follow a specific creed. It's those kinds of conversations where I find that the use of the word spiritual, spirit, soul, what have you, even awe, depending on, you know, in the way that I think maybe Diana kind of meant it. I just think that for people like that, and I think that's a lot of people, those terms are so ambiguous. They're easy to latch onto, but very difficult to actually kind of get out of the metaphysical baggage where they came from without some of the assumptions and to think, like Oprah says, oh, because you believe in these things, you cannot be an atheist. Well, it depends on what you mean by soul or spirit.
Right.
And so I'm advocating for let's just avoid these unclear words altogether, if we can.
Yeah, I can get behind that. Maybe it's a good time to mention, we actually had intended to talk about this topic before we learned that Sam Harris's new book is, I think it's called Spirituality. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's going to be about being spiritual and atheist, I believe, or reconciling spirituality and atheism. So that was interesting. That sort of, he sort of announced that, or at least that was the first time I saw it, kind of right when we were getting ready to do this. So I'll be very curious to see what he has to say on it. So it sounds like you object to using the term spiritual as an atheist almost at all, right? I mean, even if what you mean by spiritual is not what they mean, that's almost is the problem. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, right.
I wonder if, so would you object to Sam Harris using it and saying that it spiritual has to do with, being able to meditate and being able to, you know, have these higher feelings, you know, the Christopher Hitchens would always say the numinous, that kind of thing. Would you object to Sam Harris's usage in his book as it sounds like he's using it?
No. And when I've heard talks by Sam Harris or people similar to that, and when I've spoken to him about it, Sam Harris is very clear what he means by spiritual. So when he talks about it, you know what he's talking about. And so the level of ambiguity is much reduced. But I guess perhaps I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong in this, but I think that there's a culture around the word that is more ambiguous. And it's difficult to communicate what you mean when you start talking about spirituality and souls and that sort of thing to people who come to the table with a lot of assumptions already.
I agree. And I almost don't think we should use it at all, because even though Sam Harris is totally clear on it, and you're right, he is very clear about what he means, which is rare for anyone using the word spirituality. Even though he is clear, I think that all religious people are doing in this situation is using it to their advantage. They really, in my experience, they want to feel like everyone does believe what they believe, and they don't want to be challenged on that. And I think that it's important to not use these words that can make them feel like you secretly do believe. That's the most annoying accusation, I think, that atheists get. I've gotten it. I'm sure you've gotten it, David. That
absolutely.
We actually are either we're mad at God. That's so frustrating. It's like, I'm not mad at God. He doesn't exist. Or that we do really believe it, but we just don't know it or something like, you know, it's very frustrating. It's a way of kind of trying to undercut our arguments. So I think that, yeah, I don't think it's a good word to use. Just real quick to clarify, it looks like his book is called Waking Up, and it's a guide to spirituality without religion. So just to do a correction on what I said earlier.
Sure. And you know, as you were saying that, it made me think there is common cause and common belief and value between believers and non-believers for a lot of the things that we're kind of alluding to and that Diana's talking about in the interview. Appreciation for the lives that have come before, their suffering, recognition of the fact that many of the choices that you make and relationships that you form in your life will continue to have an effect in other people's lives after you die. That's something that I think is part of what it means to be, you know, to have our level of intellect, as you know, in our social interactions. That's not a religious thing. And I think when we use the word spirituality to describe kind of this whole set of ideas, I think it implies for many people that it is a religious thing. And if we talk about it in other terms, and if we don't use words like spirituality, or if we find a better way to talk about it, I think it'll be easier for us and for other people hearing us say these things, us, by us, I mean atheists, to show that those are really human things. They're not religious things. And so it can help dispel the myth that atheists don't care about, you know, whatever it is, you know, they don't care about helping children. Atheists are, I had someone recently tell me, found out I was an atheist, and she goes, "Oh, you must be a negative person then." Like, what?
Yeah.
Why would you assume that? And I think that talking about all of these common sort of like human things in non-religious terms can help make it more clear that they're human things that we atheists, religious people, anybody can share in and discuss and kind of have common cause in. And hopefully we don't get accused of being, you know, negative for being atheists, or when we say we believe in these things, maybe Oprah will believe that we're also still atheists.
Yeah. And that's the problem. So I guess I want to go back to something I started saying earlier. I don't think I finished. I think it really depends on the arena you're in, because as I'm thinking about it now, the times I've had conversations that have gone this direction you're talking about, where you go the direction of trying to find common ground with a believer, I don't know that – to what end, I guess I want to say, to what end are you finding common ground with a believer? If the end is that you just want to get along in the world, I understand. If the end is that you want to try to be able to be friends with people who are believers, you know, things like that, interpersonal relationships, I understand. But if we're talking about arguing for any change in the country, arguing for, secularism, for rights of atheists, for rights of, I don't know, gay people, if it comes up in a religious debate, I don't think there's any value in simply trying to find common ground for the sake of finding common ground, because I think they use it. I think religious people tend to use it to protect their beliefs. Especially if you're just debating, okay, does God exist? Do I believe in God? If you've ever debated that with anyone, any concessions you give like this, I am spiritual, but I do experience, they will use that to try to find common ground and then to sort of protect themselves from further attack, via argument. You know, I think it's like an insulation tool to sort of say like, oh, okay, we really do agree. And so that way I can keep my beliefs that I'm going to not really mention specifically, but I'm going to agree on some broad terms that you know, sort of hides it. So I guess I just really want to know, to what end are we finding common ground with religious people? What's the circumstance?
So for me, a lot of the way I'm thinking of it is to try to dispel this myth of atheists as people we shouldn't trust, that we should be afraid of.
Okay.
When you find out someone's an atheist, you should kind of look on them a little bit differently. And I think a lot of that comes from these kinds of assumptions, because these ideas of connections with people around us, or, you know, and whatnot, they are for many people associated so strong with their religion that when we talk about them using terms that were previously, you know, exclusively religious terms, they can't see beyond that. And so if I were to say, oh, I'm an atheist, well, it seems very natural then to expect them to think, oh, you know, maybe this person isn't somebody I want to be friends with. And I think it could overall improve the image of atheists in other people's minds if we talk about the connections between people and the appreciation for others' lives and, you know, the communities that we're a part of in non-religious terms and in terms that aren't primarily religious in the minds of the religious people. They will see them as not religious. And they'll realize that they're not able to do what you're talking about. They're not able to just say, oh, that's just an atheist that doesn't really know that they believe in a soul, but what they're describing is, you know, a soul, and they're saying soul, but they just don't, you know, they don't really know quite yet that God or Jesus is in there.
The point is, we don't want to give them the out of saying, oh, we're saying the same thing, we're just using different words. Like that tends to be the out that they can go to sometimes.
right. And so we have a few comments that we'd like to go over as we're trying to do on the end of many of our episodes. So I guess we'll go ahead and start with one. This one is on atheisticallyspeaking.com. This one's an anonymous comment, and it's a comment on episode 4, Is Atheism a Privilege for the Wealthy? And so it reads, the first 164 pages of the Alcoholics Anonymous text, including the 12 steps, have not changed since it was first published in the 1930s, even though a new edition is released every few years. That also includes a chapter called We Agnostics, which uses insultingly ignorant arguments explaining how no one could truly be an agnostic or atheist, and a chapter called To Wives, because all addicts are men with wives who just need to be a little more understanding. The 12 steps were directly inspired by the Oxford Group, a Christian organization. They had 6 steps, which Bill W. extrapolated into 12 for AA. AA claims to be spiritual, not religious, and points out that it's God as we understood him, not a specific God. But most groups I attended closed each meeting with the Lord's Prayer and were not very welcoming to people with other beliefs or none at all. I knew one woman who was Jewish, and even she had a hard time. My mom was an AA for most of my childhood, so it became my religion more so than Christianity. They push children and families of alcoholics to join related 12-step programs, even if they are not addicted to a substance, Al-Anon. In my experience, it was very much a cult and took complete control of my life. I wrote about my story for The Friendly Atheist. My story is the last on the page. And there's a link on the website if you'd like to read the anonymous post story.
Wow, that is a really great post. I also appreciate a lot. If you guys want to go on to atheisticallyspeaking.com, I generally encourage more activity on the Facebook because I think more people will see it. But of course, either way, wherever you want to post, because some people don't want to keep the anonymity. And this post this anonymous person gave has good links to the things he or she is talking about. And so I just wanted to add that. That's very, thank you for the thoughtful comment and the links. That helps a lot. So I just wanted to say that first of all.
Yeah. And I really appreciate the kind of someone who has more factual knowledge about this kind of bringing this forward, and it kind of adds more detail and weight to what we were talking about, in that episode and what I was really advocating for. And it's organizations and groups that offer services in a non-religious way, because some people just don't want to go to AA, but they have these addictions that they want to get over.
I want to add that I think I'll speak for myself. I'm not sure, David, if you were on board with this yet, but I want to do a bigger episode on this because I think there's a lot here, and it's not going to be right away probably, but I think I want to do a bigger one with maybe try to find someone who can represent the other side of this, maybe someone who recommends AA, and really try to get to the bottom of this, because it's interesting. It's something that I don't think a lot of people know about, and I didn't know about until very recently how religious it was. I really didn't. So it's a very fascinating issue. And also, having said that, I'd be curious if, David, if you think we should go further than simply to have secular organizations of this kind. Do you think we should go even further than that and actually criticize AA for being the way it is? Or do you think it's enough to just have separate organizations for people who are secular?
Yeah, that's really tough. So the same argument that I'm using, advocating for a secular version. So there, you know, when we talked about on the show that this comment is relating to, there are secular groups that do this. And one of the main arguments is that an addict who's a non-believer or an active atheist is not going to feel comfortable in an AA meeting. And so the primary focus for that person's life is getting their shit back together, getting over their addiction, and putting things in order. And so when it comes to the addiction thing, I guess my initial reaction is we can be critical of AA in the sense that I think they're being disingenuous when they say that they're, you know, more open and that, you know, it's really just kind of a general God, not a specific God. And if that indeed isn't the case, then they're being dishonest. And I think that there's criticism there.
Absolutely.
But I don't know that we should criticize them as a religious addiction help service, because when someone is in that point in their life, when they have that level of addiction, the focus is to get them over their addiction. It's not to get them to stop believing in God. I mean, really, yeah. If there's someone who's ruining their life through heroin use or, you know, alcohol or, you know, whatever the addiction may be, if they're religious, they may not feel comfortable going to a secular organization. And before we can even start talking to them about maybe some of, you know, having an intellectual conversation about their religious beliefs, their focus number one is get healthy, you know, stay alive. And if AA does it for them, you know, I just think that takes priority.
That's my initial reaction to
that.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that a possible counter argument to that will be, and this is why I do want to do a bigger show on this and get some other guests, is that they go further than saying, okay, we need to get you well. They say, they've been accused of actually preying on these people in order to push the religious aspect. And that would be something worth looking into. I don't know that that's true, but that is something that I've heard someone talk about before. Someone who I might try to get on the show. So that would be something interesting.
That sounds like it would be a great show. And any charity that's only charity for the purposes of spreading a religion, I mean, I think that's manipulative and wrong.
And I think that rather than having one that's religious and one that's secular, I'm not going to stop people, I guess, if they're trying to help people. But why can't we just have one that's really neither, and so is, I guess, by definition, secular, but
yeah,
not...
Yeah, I was just going to say, isn't that what secular is?
I know, but not outwardly secular. Not with a mission statement of, this is a secular thing. Just, let's get better, and let's get you better, and here's the science on how to get better. Let's do it. Now, because the AA really is, it is incredible how much religious garbage is in the 12 steps. It's crazy. I mean, that's more than just another, you know, interpretation of getting well. That's like active recruitment, it sounds like. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll look into it more. Thank you so much for the comment. And we should probably move on to the next one because this show's getting long. But that's very interesting.
Sure. So, Thomas, would you like to read the comment on Facebook?
Sure, I will. This is by Jeffrey Pearson. He comments a lot, and it's always appreciated. Very dedicated listener to the show, so thanks. So he said, he also posted this on the website, by the way, and that's fine with us too. Post them on both if you want to. If you're not worried about anonymity, post it on the Facebook. Generally, a good place to seek some community is to a Unitarian Universalist church. And sorry, this was in response to, that was episode 5, right? That was the one we just had, atheist churches. They tend to take an anything-goes policy and would be typically thought of as an agnostic organization as opposed to an atheistic organization. Thomas, you may wish, that's me, you may wish to check one out. Most decent-sized cities have at least one in the area. I live in southeastern Wisconsin, and there are three in the greater area. When I'm under pressure, I'm not great with state abbreviations, okay? and there are three in the greater area, one downtown and one in each of the north and the west suburbs. I haven't actually been to the nearest one, but I have an acquaintance who is a leader there. They follow humanist principles and tend to be very friendly and inviting. Here is their overarching organizational site, and he included a link.
So can I just first say that I don't think a single comment has mentioned me at all, and like almost every single one of them that we talk about mentions you by name.
To be fair, it's because most of them are coming from my other podcast, so that's nothing to do with David. That's just that you know, people who have listened to me ramble on about the Bible over and over, I think they're kind of used to me, so that's all that's about. But it's worth acknowledging. It's not like I'm cherry picking these to try to like, yeah, no,
we tried to talk about one that mentioned me and Thomas said no.
Actually, there was a comment on the Facebook that mentioned you. But
I guess I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's on, well, whatever, we'll find it later. But there was one that mentioned you now that I think about it. So boo hoo. Oh, here it is right here. Here. Now I'm going to read it. This is part of the show. Lenny S said, David Johnson, I really like your podcasts.
So getting back on track, back to this comment.
So have admirers out there, David.
They're out there. So the one thing I really appreciate about this comment, the Jeffrey's comment.
Which one?
It's that I appreciate the sentiment, but I do have a bit of a kind of important personal story related to something like this. So I worked for a long time at Tufts University trying to get them to establish a humanist chaplain. And I mean, this is for like, you know, the last year and a half that I was there. And for the last year, that was kind of all I really did. And we were led to believe that we were going to get a humanist chaplain, the group of us that were really, really on board with this. And towards the end of the year, we were told that a new chaplain would be coming on board. And the chaplain that came on board was a UU chaplain, was a Unitarian Universalist chaplain. Mm. And the argument that was kind of given to us, the justification, I guess, is that the UU church is so open. And they are. They're not a closed-door kind of church. You know, you're not going to go and be insulted for not saying that, you know, you believe what they believe. They're not going to force you to do a certain prayer or anything. So they're open in that way. And the argument was that they would encompass our beliefs as well, the humanist beliefs, which Jeffrey points out. But I think what's missed in the UU church, and what many people, maybe not all, but what many non-believers, humanist atheists are looking for, some of us, myself included, when I'm looking for an organization, I am looking for a group that's not just an anything goes kind of policy. I'm looking for some kind of like commiseration, some empathy, some, you know, common ground with people who see the world a little bit more like I do, so that if I'm going through a tough time or I'm looking for support or I'm looking for community action or something like that, you know, there's already this shared commonality between the people in the community that I'm a part of. And maybe that's just me and you know, not everybody's like that. But a lot of us at Tufts felt a little bit like they'd missed the mark when they gave us a UU chaplain as opposed to a humanist chaplain. But, you know, to be fair, I graduated when the chaplain was put in. To the best of my knowledge, the chaplain's done everything that they could do to, you know, really be open to the community. And some of the members have, you know, really appreciated that. But it wasn't exactly what we were looking for.
That was kind of my reaction to reading this as well. And I do thank you for the suggestion, Jeffrey. But when I look at the site and it says it's a theologically diverse religion, I'm already like, no theology. Well, I don't want anything that has anything to do with theology. When this says that encourages people to seek their own spiritual path, that sentence is meaningless to me personally. I know we've just had a debate about using the word spirituality, but I don't use it in my life. I understand if people want to use it, but it's just nothing to me. The word for my life personally, if we're talking about joining a church, a spiritual path is nothing to me. That's just a meaningless statement. So I don't think I'd really be interested in that. But I'm sorry, you know, I appreciate the comment. I don't want to turn you off from future comments or anything, but it doesn't sound like for me. It almost, in some ways, and this is an odd thing, I'll just make it quick because this is getting long. In some ways, I'm more personally irritated by liberal religion than I am by hardcore religion, because in some ways, just for me, it frustrates me because like they try to have everything every way that they want while still protecting other people who are religious and believe whatever and also criticizing you for being critical of religion. So my experience with people who are really liberal in their religion has not been positive for me. So that's all I'll say on that when I'm thinking about for myself joining a church. I'm not going to speak for anyone else. Go ahead and do that if that's something you're into. So that wraps it up for me.
Great. Yeah, me as well.
We will continue the discussion on spirituality on Monday's episode, so check that out. Also, please write us a review on iTunes. The contest is still open until February 8th.